Chapter 16. Strange things happened to the water the deeper one went in the Green Gulch. At the most basic level it still resembled water. It was a liquid. With a little effort, Filenduil could still blend it to create ether sea. Lurien could swim in it. He could breathe it, though it tasted sour and burned the back of his throat as it went down to his lungs. Water, though, should not sparkle as though every droplet had trapped an emerald. Nor should it sing. Its voice was that of a million sirens, timid but hungry, invisible to the eye, manifesting only in spectral harmony and the unnatural caress of currents on elven skin. Water did none of these things. Laughter, or something eerily akin to it, bubbled up from nowhere, bouncing from insane formations of coral and rock that should have been impossible at any depth. And already they were far, far deeper than Lurien had ever gone, deeper than all but the most solitary of deepkin would ever dare to venture. It was not just the geography that was impossible. Miles beneath the range of any fish or creature that glowed, miles more below the deepest reaches of Gairan's absent sun, darkness should have reigned absolute. Water did not glow. But then light and water had more in common with each other than with the substance that Lurien and his followers actually swam through now. Magic. It was magic, not water, that filled the darkest reaches of the deep nothing, beyond the imagined borders of the Green Gulch. The primordial creation energies left over from the founding of the realm sphere resided there, stagnant and heavy. It was said that a raw magic could still be found at the boundaries of the realm sphere, a gushing torrent of life magic that the realm would one day subdue and domesticate into the natural cycles of Gairan. The magic of the oceans was neither one nor the other. Elemental, yes. Destructive, yes. But it was also torpid, like a dragon of old, curled up in a hollow beneath the notice of mortals and gods, and sleeping this age of the world away, forced into this sluggish, liquid-like state by the titanic pressures of the true ocean above. Even that was to endow the conditions of the deep nothing with a physical parallel they simply did not and could never possess. Deeper still they went, deeper, until even Lurien could feel his nose filling with a bleed that the phenomenal inward pressures would not allow to escape from his nostril. The blockage made his eye quiver, his head hurt. This was not the Idoneth's environment. It was not even close. And still Irime led them deeper.
"Further,"
Irime said one tide as they rested, waiting for Filenduil to recover sufficiently for another cast.
"If the Feldglaive seeks you, then he may yet divert his wrath from Gwethen to come after you."
Lurien simply shook his head, too exhausted to speak. Even the great soul scryers of Briandar would have struggled to pluck a single lost soul from the vastness of the deep nothing. It would be like finding a particular grain of sand on a beach. So they waited. It was later that tide that Lurien encountered his first demon. Namariel saw it first. Her bow was up before Lurien had even felt the warping effect of its existence on the not water. She loosed. The whisperwood shaft disintegrated before it had leapt off the bowstring, imploding under the pressure. The demon lurched for her. There was something catastrophically unstable in its nature. Arms became tentacles, then flippers, then gelatinous millipede-like pseudopods, then arms. The fluidity of the change stumbling the entity when it could easily have swum. Shrieking like a kettle shaking atop a heatstone, Deepgrove dived on the blob-like thing with raking talons. Fecund energies overflowed from the demon's wounds, driving the maddened outcast back as something toad-like and cyclopean wriggled through the rents in its form. Lurien spurred venom to the dryad's aid, just as a long arm of alabaster-pale skin, crowned with a pincer claw, erupted from the oozing meat of the demon's shoulder. Its spine cracked as it turned its head towards him. a long tongue unfurled from a mouth that was half beautiful and half revolting, and Lurien cried out in soul fright. Venom reared in confusion. Stung out of his horror, Lurien drew Eslakai from its sheath, but even its light was subdued there. It caused neither him nor the demon the slightest pain. Irume swam in behind the entity's broken neck, driving her pain stave into the demon's putrid lower body. Its patchwork frame fluctuated like ripples breaking a reflection, but it had less to do with the Druhiri magic bound to the pain stave than with the tightly disciplined soul of the elf that wielded it. The newly shapeless demon slapped her aside, bands of elaborate golden armour bursting from the writhing ether of its form to wrap themselves around an emerging figure of androgyne beauty as it rounded on Lurien. The demonette licked barb-like teeth, then blew him a kiss. Lurien dropped Eslakai to the not-water and screamed.
"Go back to the deep,"
Felenduil muttered. Lowering his vine staff to the demon, he made a rippling motion with his offhand. A vortex whipped about the demon's adopted form. The Tidecaster was accustomed to turning the innate magic of the realm's oceans to his bidding, but this time it was the bottomless reservoir of that raw creation energy itself that he commanded. The vortex he summoned shredded the demonette down to its constituent ether and cast it back to the ocean of its making with an explosion that threw all of them onto their backs. "What was that?" Lurien breathed as they all pushed themselves back up.
"A demon,"
said Irime.
"The magic here is pure creation. It is aligned to no power. It is enough to sustain a demon's existence, but they depend on the souls of mortals to give them form and focus."
Lurien frowned, saying nothing as he dragged Deepgrove back to her feet and ensured that she was secured to Venom's harness. He did not want to dwell any longer than he needed to on the demonic form his soul had chosen to take.
"She is leading us nowhere,"
Namariel hissed, sighting down the shaft of her arrow as only a Namatai could, face turned out, feeling what lay beyond the arrowhead. Lurien could not imagine what that might be in this dread place. With his own more limited senses and imagination, he could make out Irime, sheathed in several tides' worth of magical emerald glow, crouched low with her palm flat to the rocky floor. Occasionally she lifted her gaze to confer with Felenduil. The Tidecaster had dismounted, his Fangmora slumbering fitfully a short distance away. Their discussions had become increasingly lengthy and embittered as the tides had come and gone. "The Tidecaster seems to agree with you," said Lurien.
"Because we are both right," she said.
Lurien pinched his temples, snorting another bloody bolus back down into his lungs before coughing it up. The ether sea could only mitigate so much of the pressure, and it was only getting harder to bear the deeper they went. He wiped the back of his hand on his armour. "Need I remind you that it's because of you that we're here in the first place?"
"Is it, my prince? Is it? Because I do not recall being the one to renege on our promise."
Namariel pivoted her eyeless gaze towards him, the fulcrum of her arrow shaft remaining perfectly stable in its aim.
"You always want the brightest thing. When you were a child, it was Lagithe. In Elgaean, it was Nael. For a time, it was me, until you became infatuated with that."
A tilt of the brow towards Eslakai, sheathed across Lurien's back.
"Now it is Gwyn, dear. So, have her. Assemble yourself an entire cohort of servile Namatai, if that's what you wish. Perhaps the gods will never see us fulfil our oaths. But I will be a queen to you in all but name."
"I never asked you why you killed Nael," Lurien murmured.
"You did not ask because you knew why. He was in your way. And so he was in mine."
"And Gwyndia? Is she in your way?"
"You will grow bored of her on your own," she smirked, sensing Lurian's protest. "I'm sure she seems very fine to you now, but you do not have it in you to be satisfied. So, enjoy her while you are able to."
Ahead of them, Irime rose. Filenduil kicked his Fangmora awake, then remounted, his staff raised. Again, Lurien muttered. Time lost definition. There was no day-night cycle, no tidal variation. Even the sense of time took on a curious elasticity. Sometimes it felt as though they had departed Gwethyn only hours before. At others, it felt closer to 100 years. Were Galdra here and Mabor still waiting? Was he too late? Had Larimée crushed the entire enclave in her rage? Had Gwethyn surrendered? Had they all died centuries ago? Did the children of the Radiant Queen now rule the Green Gulch from the arbor keeps of Dwihor, fighting off the noxious tides of Coryza, while a nameless, forgotten pretender sank deeper and deeper into the nothing? One time, certain he had seen a particularly mountainous formation of coppery rock once before, he caught a glimpse of himself moving off in the opposite direction. It felt like being visited by his own ghost. He mentioned it to Namariel, who suggested that the magic was confusing his senses, and that he was a fool to think it was light and eyes he was seeing with in that place. He had not believed her for a second. Even counting his sleeps became an unreliable means of marking time. Everything had become like a dream. The only method left was to keep a tally of Filenduil's castings, and this Lurien did religiously. After each great throw of the old tide caster's strength, they would stumble from the tideways some interminable distance from where they had last been, and there stop long enough only for Filenduil to recover. Irume would project her Embela sight into the ocean, sounding for the soul spore of their prey, Namariel and her Namatai senses keeping watch for demonic attack, while the two Isharan were engaged. With nothing nearly so useful to contribute, Lurien became obsessed with keeping his count, worrying endlessly over the number in his mind. He took instead to carving it into Venom's flank. She did not object. She did not notice. Then, when Filenduil felt his strength restored, he and Irime would argue. And Lurien carved a 19th notch into the Fangmora's skin. By the 24th casting, Lurien had filled Venom's shoulder and started scratching on her fin. After the 32nd, she started to notice and snapped at the hand with the knife. He disciplined her, a firm smack to the nose, and then, diligently, carved a 33rd. After the 52nd casting, Irime announced that they were close.
"Something is alive in there," she said.
She spoke with so little enthusiasm that after 53 fruitless castings, Lurien could not convince himself that the Embela was entirely sincere.
"Are you sure?" he said.
"You are sure that there is a current pulling at your ears? You are sure that a heart beats in your chest? Your senses tell you so."
She turned away.
"So, yes, I am sure."
The vista before them was jagged with flumes and spines, as though the ocean floor had drawn molten rock from beneath itself to encase itself in armour. The majestic structures stabbed out of the bedrock at every possible angle, as well as several more that should not have been possible at all, glittering and malign. Cruder formations of rock and accreted magic dotted the otherwise pristine arrangement of spires, coronets and crescents, rotundas and stacks. They seemed to have been drawn from the earth by the same arcane processes as the spines, only to have become broken or somehow found flawed, their growth turned inwards to some other geometrically imperfect shape. The formation that lay directly in Irime's eyeline was a right-handed spiral of calcified magic and of truly monstrous dimensions. It was 100 feet wide at the base, and 1,000 high, leaning into the side of a spire that was itself almost 3 times that height. Its resemblance to the shell of some gargantuan snail was so acute that Lurien expected at any moment to see a soft body oozing from the opening at the base, antennae the size of Leviadon, waving in search of elven prey. He dared not breathe.
"That can't be the beast that Anir sent us here to claim," he whispered. "Can it?"
Irume chuckled. It was like listening to the legs being pulled from the underbelly of a shrimp.
"Do creatures of that scale dwell somewhere in the deep nothing? I am sure they do. But be calm, Prince Lurian. You are looking at a creation of nature and time. The monster we hunt simply dwells within."
"How can you be so sure?"
"Now, this question again? I simply am."
"Is there anything else you can sense from it?" The Umbela closed her eyes. She remained that way for a long spell, then shook her head.
"It is large, though not as large as you feel. Old. Very powerful."
Her eyes reopened.
"That is all it will let me see."
"Let you?"
"It is not aware of us yet, if that is what concerns you, but it is a creature of magic, and subconsciously it senses me as I sense it."
"Do we go into its lair and take it?"
Namariel left the exhausted Felenduil and the two ever-patient Fangmoras to swim ahead and join them.
"Or do we lure it out, fight it in open water?"
She and Lurian both turned to Irume, who shrugged.
"What bait do we have to lure a beast that has not stirred since the realm sphere itself was made?"
she said. Lurian kicked himself higher for a better look, swimming a few dozen feet nearer to the mouth of the cave. Anticipation and fear together wound a noose about his chest, a burning tightness. He could turn around, still, go home, wherever that might be, once Vanglai was finished with Gwethyn. But Namariel had been right about him, and something about this timeless expanse bared his soul to the gods and to himself. He wanted this beast. He wanted it for no other reason than it was there to be taken, and he had said that he would have it. He was a descendant of the Kaithai, who were themselves descended from the Asur. What kind of king was he without his dragon to ride? Muscle by muscle, desire pushed fear aside until there was nothing of it left but a numb tingle in his fingers and toes. He refused to return empty-handed to humiliation and defeat, and perhaps even death, though he was confident that he would be able to flee before it came to that, if it should come to that. But flee where? To what? Do we haul? The whirlway? He set his jaw, discovering that the decision had already been made. "We go in," said Lurian. "In a man?"
"Hook spears and nets," said the Umbela.
Her voice rose from snarl to growl to address them all.
"You will find them in the saddlebags I loaded onto your Fangmoras."
She grinned, an expression that might have been a new addition to the Druhiri tattoos covering the old elf's face for all the emotion it conveyed.
"Today, you are all to be Umbelar Namartai. You will herd the monster for me, distract it from doing me harm while I strike at its mind."
"Sounds as though you've given yourself the easier task," said Lurian. The Umbela turned her shoulder.
"Tell that to my master. And to his master. Ubrach's arm is inside Queen Anir's deep mare now. And his leg, too. I told you that this beast is a creature of magic. Be assured that it will have defences beyond those that you can see."
Lurian hoisted the caparison from Venom's flanks. It revealed a secondary travel harness of looped belts around its barrel, studded with buckles and clasps and attachment sites for their gear. Most of the bags had contained pressurized water and foodstuffs and were now empty. He tried not to think about it. Eating would become a concern for him if he was alive tomorrow. A long spear, more a pike designed to keep some hapless Namartai as far from the teeth of their quarry as was possible, was slotted across a pair of dangling hooks. It was half as long as Venom, running from her shoulder to the base of her tail. The haft was thicker than that of an ordinary war spear, bite marks and scratches telling of prior good use. It had two blades. One was long and straight with reversed barbs. The other curled back towards the haft and was serrated on the inside edge for hooking flesh. The weapon had been painstakingly designed to ensure that its blades stayed inside whatever they stabbed, and would do plenty of damage should whatever that was manage to pull free. Further back, Felinduil was similarly engaged, though it was clear that playing the role of Namartai did not sit as lightly with the old Isharan as it did with his prince. He pulled brusquely at his Fangmora's coverlets, complaining all the while under his breath of bitter joints and indignity. In a perfect realm, Lyurian was sure there was some use to have been made of the Tidecaster's powers in the coming battle. But if the perfect realm was out there somewhere, Lyurian had yet to find it. The Isharan was spent. Even his vine staff had been plucked bare, yielding the last of its bounteous fruit to see them this far into the deep nothing. When Namariel swam back to claim her own spear, she took charge of the drowsing Fangmora, and the Tidecaster offered no protest. Lyurian freed his hook spear at about the same moment that Namariel did hers, brandishing it at arm's length to admire in full its perfectly crafted lethality. The bedrock trembled. Tremors pulsed through the knot water and through the elves that swam in it. The spiral shell structure ahead of them ground against the spine on which it leant, an inky issue burbling from the mouth of the formation. It was as much magical as physical, the oily manifestation of an ancient creature's malice and power. Lyurian lowered his hook spear as the reverberations ran through him. Namariel did the same, reaching instinctively for her bow stave, which brought another grumble of unrest from the shell.
"Release your weapons," said Irime.
The Namartai released her fingers from the whisper hood, then slowly unpeeled her hand. The tremors faded, then ceased altogether.
"Incredible," Irime whispered. "The beast must be in part demonic, or so infused with the essence of the deep nothing as to share something of their properties. It is feeding off your malicious intent."
The Imbaler turned around. Cruel fascination mauled her already unattractive face.
"I was wrong, Prince Lyurian. Very wrong. It knows we are here. It knew even before we did."
Namariel's fingers twitched for her bow, itching to take it up, however useless it might prove.
"And I do not think we should venture in there, not if it is lying in wait."
Lyurian turned back to the cave mouth, as hooked as any prey beast on an Imbaler spear, and unable to break free now without ripping something that would not soon heal. "I agree," he said, and then smiled. He had an idea. "Only one of us needs to go." Time was already meaningless. Lyurian made it stop. His thoughts froze like splinters between vast sheets of ice, floating, separated by a gulf of silence and cold. His soul gusted somewhere across that void, rootless and adrift, watchful for him as he watched for it. Beyond the boundaries of the mind's expanse, a body smiled. Fingers closed around the shaft of a spear and pulled. The draw lasted the duration of an ice age. He felt nothing. No echo of malice answered the unsheathed blade.
"Rem."
Inume's mouth yawned open. Her voice ludicrously slowed down.
"Mark."
The meditative exercises that Lyurian's mother had taught him as a child quietened his soul. It separated from his thoughts, neutered both from his body. Demons were creatures of fear and emotion. The familiar forms they wore but rags cut from the finery of mortal subconsciousness. A demon, or even a magical beast of the deep nothing, could not draw on that which even Lyurian could not feel. He was an empty well, an eclipsed star, a black hole. He was the light drowned at the bottom of the sea. The whole purpose of the technique was to hide. He hated it, despised how it made him feel, and the thoughts it opened his quiet mind to receive, but the monster would never see him coming. He had only to injure it, trap it, and then Irimé and the others could follow him in. The Embalo was still speaking as the Lurian body took a net from her, slid it up his arm to the shoulder, and then swam towards the cave mouth. Reaching it took an eternity, but he was not counting. The Lurian body swam inside. While his mind occupied itself with navigating the distances between thoughts and with vague conceptualizations of a future involving beast and blade, the body looked around. It was darker within than it had been without, sheltered by fluted walls against the endless flows of creation magic. The Lurian body extended Eslakai. Its amethyst soul glow crept with algal haste towards the cavern's walls. Its appearance brought no great revelation. A tubular cavern, curling upwards and inwards towards the distant centre point of the spiral. A baleful smear of soul essence scarred the walls in places, scratches left in the fabric of the ether by the passage of a beast. The marks were invisible to mortal senses, but to his altered perceptions, they smouldered like runes stamped onto the metal of a freshly wrought blade. An understanding of how Irimé had tracked the beast across such an expanse of ocean became clear to him. The creature had not slept the cold eons post-creation dormant in its lair. It had left, it had hunted, it had fed, and it had returned. It was here, and it knew he was here. The Lurian body responded to its understanding with something called fear. A glacial creep moved through its bones, freezing its liquid insides. But it was separate from him now, and from the monster. It did not know he was here. Holding the glowing spear aloft, torch and talisman, both the Lurian body swam deeper. The way narrowed, vast still, but always curving until up and down ceased to exist. Only forwards and backwards remained. The spear's light caught less and less surface as the walls became closer. The Lurian body's mouth became chafed. Its muscles ached with tension. He had no way of knowing how long that had been so, for time meant nothing to an untethered mind. Cold rationality held that every additional foot he was made to swim meant a monster that was several feet smaller than it could otherwise have been. But the severance of body from mind and soul was not one way. It held on to its fear in ignorance while he watched on from afar. It would have been scant consolation in any case. There was volume enough where the Lurian body swam to allow the passage of a Leviathan, and there were miles of tunnel ahead yet. He forgot rationality. He would rather face the monster now. The Lurian body swam on. His mind by then had adjusted to the expanses between moments. The interval between what passed before and what came after felt less epochal than it had before. Eslakai's light brushed the dust of darkness from another essence smear on the wall. The Lurian body paused. It was the first mark it had glimpsed since the one on the entrance wall. Chance? Or was it getting closer? A mark of territory, perhaps, or a threat. A low growl struck up from the tunnel ahead, a deep, throbbing bass. Flesh converted the sound into a mental image. With that image came a dread that no degree of spiritual separation short of permanent unlife could insulate him against. It was aware of him. But how? He had been perfectly controlled. Lagithe would have been awed. She might even have found it in her soul to praise him for once in her long, cruel life. He perceived a spark of soul essence from somewhere in the maelstrom of raw ether beyond the walls of the cave. Behind him, Elven, Felindjuil, and swiftly hidden. Not swiftly enough. Another growl rumbled from the abyss ahead. With answers slow in forming, he pulled his thoughts back and into the cold shell of his body. He may as well have been lighting himself on fire, but that did not seem important now.
The beast was alert to him. He had to move. He turned his spear towards the inward passage. And then it came. He saw it only for a moment. The indigo-blue soul-glow of his spear glanced off jellied skin mottled green and grey, blood-infused tissue throbbing beneath translucent flesh, a great eye bulging and black. It devoured what light came near as though impervious, seeing by other means, failing to return even a glint, a slab of nose, a flash of tooth. A moment was more than enough. The mass of it forced a compression wave into the tunnel space ahead of it, picking Lurien up like a shipwreck in a storm before the behemoth even came near. Soul light raked over glittering walls, scrabbling for purchase. Holding the spear one-handed, he flailed it behind him with an arm. His fingers brushed something. Clammy but rigid. A fin. Armour. He made a grab for it, but was spinning ahead of the wave before he could get a purchase. With a shout of frustration, he cast out again and again, almost giving thought to abandoning Eslakai to free both hands, before finally managing to curl his fingertips over some nail-width protrusion in the monster's side. His previously tumbling direction of movement became aggressively forwards. Water hammered his head into his shoulders, driving him flat to the monster's carapace and screaming past his ear, "Let go!" His fingers slipped. He bent his wrist into the torrent, transferring the burn from his fingers to the bones of his hand, turning the face of his agony from the rush of water and screaming as the monster burst like a razor-shell harpoon from the mouth of the cave. Then he let go. The monster's bow wave propelled him well wide of the creature as it surged on ahead without him. Outside the cocooning darkness of the cave structure, Lurien saw it clearly. It was a nightmare of the primordial ooze blown out of the proportions of mortal fear to rule an ocean. An Alopex, at least in origin, but five times the bulk of even a Blacknach, and encased in glittering emerald plates of prehistoric magic. Where the grey, jelly-like tissue of flesh squirmed beneath the armour, it showed the organs within. A heart throbbing madly in a cage of ghost-white bone, gills rippling like canvas sails underway. He could see every vein that cut through its leviathan-ending mouth, a feast of translucent gums and row after row after row of huge cartilaginous teeth. It was a monster like no other in the mortal realms, a unique abomination, swollen and mutated into a new and terrible form by the forgotten magics of the deep nothing. No name known to the bestiaries of the Umbela Fanes could do it justice, but Lurien found the title that fit it there already in his subconscious. Darathai. In the Eltharai of the Awakened, it meant Black Dragon. That was what it was to Lurien. That was what it would be. He wanted it. A lilting war cry rang out, and Lurien paddled and kicked to stabilize himself in the water. He turned in the direction it had come from, to see Namariel knocking an arrow to her bow. Surging ahead of her was Felenduil's Fangmora, terror penetrating deep enough into its mangled brain to override its survival instinct and even Embela discipline. It powered into the attack. If there was any conscious thought or sense to its actions, however, Lurien could not see it. It was pressure madness. Lurien had no personal experience of the affliction, but it had been luridly described to him by warriors like Kalohair, who had attempted to bring live prisoners back with them to the enclaves. It was said, too, that the Ocean Clan Oryx that roved the seabeds of the Shallows suffered from it constantly, accounting for their destructive mania and savagery. The Elgonite Fangmora was weaker and less thoroughly broken than Venom, and even Irime's harsh imprecations could not slow it now. The Darathai snapped the Fangmora in two. Bluish blood splattered its fangs. The bottom half of a giant eel spun out from the monster's jaws, leaking tendrils of gore.
Mathlan! Lurien yelled. Preserve us!
Namariel loosed an arrow. After their first encounter with a demon of the Deep Nothing, Felenduil had enchanted a quiver to better survive the pressure. But the Tidecaster would have been better served preserving his energies. The arrow snapped against the Darathai's armour.
Felendual cried out, terror coming at the Tidecaster in a rare and giddying extreme, and thrust his embaler hook spear into the unprotected flesh of the monster's face. A snap of its jaws demolished the hardened wooden shaft down to the grip. It swallowed the blades. Lurien saw them go down. The force of the spear's obliteration hurled the Tidecaster away from the monster's mouth, giving Namariel the time to catch his ankle and drag him clear. It took the Darathai the remainder of a heartbeat to finish destroying the Embalo spear and then twist around to pursue the two elves. Namariel launched another arrow. This time she targeted an eye which burst like a corlep grape under an Archelian's boot heel. The growl the Darathai's jaws were emitting grew in intensity, perhaps in pain. But Lurien had seen no evidence that it was capable of feeling such a thing. Perhaps just with speed. Vast muscles swept its dorsal tail blade from side to side as it accelerated. The two elves scattered, and it swept between them before turning with a frustrated snap of its jaws to chase after Namariel. Lurien realized that the monster was ignoring him. It was possible that some residual effect of the separation trance was obscuring his soul from its senses. But it could just as easily have been that the piscine simplicity of its mind could not hold two thoughts in its head at once. Either way, he was content to take advantage. The Darathai quickly devoured the distance to Namariel, the Namatai quite aware of it without needing to look back. She turned, stabbed with her hook spear. The blade scraped off the underside of its head, chipping magical armour, and punted her just beneath the reach of its jaws. Its neck, as thick as a regular alopex, was long, twisted after her, and its mouth snapped shut mere inches from the Namatai's foot. Lurien frowned, almost disappointed as the storm of bubbles swallowed Namariel and pushed her away from danger. There was a part of him that was tempted to wait it out, to watch for the heartbeat and a half it would take to see the Namatai eviscerated like the poor Fangmora had been before her. But greed overruled such petty interests as revenge. The Darathai was his. He knew he had promised it to Anir, but he would deal with that problem later. As he had with Mabor and his precious spear, he wanted it. This was his dragon. Something unkempt and wild in his psyche gave a whoop, propelling him into the Darathai like a spirit of Kurnoth. He drove Eslekai into the monster's abdomen. Coarse-grained plates of magical sediment cracked under the blow of the ensorcelled spear, a jelly-like grey mush spluttering out from the wounded section as he tore the spear tip free. The monster bucked, throwing Lurien off and into a backward somersault. It slowed, turned, and by the time Lurien had himself righted, it was coming straight for him, liquid magic rushing across the Titan's pectoral fins, jaws gnashing.
"Prince Lurien!"
Namariel loosed an arrow that thunked into a join between the thick plates covering the Darathai's head section. Drawing and firing so swiftly that she became a blur in the water, she riddled the monster's head with the pale shafts. A dozen shattered against its magically toughened flesh. It tilted its dorsal line as though deliberately using its own armoured bulk to shield the more vulnerable parts of its head. Nevertheless, one pinpoint shot nailed the monster's second eye and splattered its hide with black jelly. Champing at everything around it in a water-frothing frenzy, the Darathai snapped towards Lurien's hip. A vortex swirled up from under its belly before its bite could close and pushed the monster up over his head. Its jaws crashed shut over empty water, and Lurien turned to strike his spear tip along its underbelly. Unlike with a Leviathan, however, he found no weak point in its armour there, and the Darathai cruised overhead, angry, blind, but otherwise uninjured. Lurien put a hand to his waist, as if to assure himself his legs were attached by more than mere water pressure, and looked down at the shattered Tidecaster. "Indebted," he gasped. Filenduil did not answer. He was already dragging himself back to where Venom floated placidly, curled around the Idoneth's gear, flickering her tongue in the direction of the behemoth with mind-broken disinterest. Namariel knocked another arrow. Lurien raised his spear.
"Do not kill it!"
Irime yelled. The Master Embala had held herself separate from the fray until then, obscuring her soul with discipline as Lurien had with ritual, But she entered it now, delivering a scream that was part Druhiri death curse and part M'Baylor mage pulse. The spell shock hit straight at the Darathai's brain and crunched the unnatural carapace that encased its head. Grey matter leaked from the cracks. The water around the monstrous alopex seethed and foamed, clouding up with blood and brain matter as the beast thrashed in its pain throes. Lurien could no longer see it. He backpedaled to put himself further beyond its reach. With a roar, the wounded Darathai burst from the clouded water, jaws yawning wide, straight at Lurien. Crying out, Lurien hoisted Eslakai by instinct. The spear blade stabbed into the soft palate at the back of the giant's mouth. It bit down hard. Teeth cracked. The charnel reek of stale magic and butchered metal wafted outward across Lurien's face. He gagged, pushed back against his spear, its spectral light filtered now through veins, chew muscles and teeth. The Darathai opened its mouth again and roared.
"Kill it!" he screamed. "Kill it now! I have it!"
Irime's hollow ecstasy rang through the false dark.
"I have it!"
The monster drove him forwards, jaws crunching shut again. Irime levelled another pain curse. The Darathai shuddered. Lurien felt it weaken. He shook against his spear pull, blood squirming from the giant Alapex's mouth where the tip was lodged, but only seeming to excite the ravenous monster further. Philindul returned, dragging a heavy net. He cast it over the Darathai's head. Lurien cursed him as the weight of the net pushed him closer towards the monster's mouth. The growl emanating from its cavernous throat became the sound of death, the flocking of the black-finned Nathir that ferried the souls of the damned from the gates of Mirai to the old underworld of the elves. It was all he could do to hold on to his spear pole and push himself back against the net. Namariel swam to attack the Darathai's mouth with a hook spear from above, blizzarding Lurien with wood and metal splinters.
"Cease!"
Irime yelled, driving her pain stave from on high and into the roof of the monster's skull with a splintering of bone. Spasms of agony tore through the great beast, throwing Lurien from its jaws, the weight of the net capturing him and pushing him back towards the side of its mouth. He cursed, clinging to the netting as the Darathai reared.
"No!"
Irime snarled, tiny beneath its gaping jaws.
"You will obey!"
A gasp of stale breath wafted through the M'Baylor's robes as the Darathai's strength seemed to abandon it. The growling ceased, its gills stilling. All sense of hostility retreated into its magic-encrusted skin. Lurien grinned even as the dead weight of it and Philendul's net pushed him ever back towards its dumbly hanging mouth. It was over.
"Lurien," said Namariel, tugging at the net, "my prince."
He began to laugh, a mirthless celebration of madness.
"Bind the creature's mouth shut,"
he heard Irime say.
"Then cover its fins and make ready to return it to Turach."
"And from there to Gwethyn," Lurien thought, "with a real army at my back." This was, by Lurien's reckoning, only the third hopeless task he had accomplished since setting out from Briomdar. What was one more? All that remained now was to kill Vanglaer Felglaive.